I believe that the reason people work 5 and 6 days a week, or they only work 5 days and they don't get much in the way of results, is because they waste a lot of time not working on dollar productive activities.
Welcome to the Real Estate Pros Podcast, the weekly show for real people in the business of residential sales and property management. Ready to talk insights and inspiration with today's guest, here's your host, Josh Cobb.
Hello everyone, welcome back to Real Estate Pros. Thank you so much for joining me this week. I am your host, Josh Cobb, and this is the weekly show for people in the business of residential sales and property management, where we interview real estate pros and industry experts from all across Australia and around the world, getting to know them a little more personally and the stories behind their success to help you take your career to another level. And I'm excited about this week's show. I'm speaking with Gary Pittard, the Managing Director of the Pittard Training Group. Gary is going to share with us his journey in the real estate industry. We're going to discuss why sales skills are important for everyone in a real estate business and why sales is a numbers game, but leadership isn't. But before we catch up with Gary or have another discovery I'd like to share with you this week, so let's do that right now.
Today's show is brought to you by Real Estate Dynamics, the industry leaders in property management training, consulting, and rent roll and agency brokerage. Find them at realestatedynamics.com.au.
So this week I'd like to share with you a tip for anyone using an iPhone device. It's a little trick that I found recently when talking to our service provider about a bill that we had. It seemed a little bit higher than usual, and it looked like some of the apps were using a lot more data than we thought they were. So if that's ever happened to you, if you've ever had a bill that's astronomically high and you're thinking, look, you know, I haven't changed my usage habits, then there could be some apps in the background that are running that you might not be aware of. So if you go to your settings screen on your iPhone, and right at the top of the screen, you'll see the first selection is airplane mode. Then you've got Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, and mobile. So if you click on mobile, down the bottom when you scroll down, you'll see all of the apps that you've got installed on your phone and whether you have allowed those apps to use data. And what that means is when you're out and about using the 4G network, whatever service provider you may be with, that app has your permission to basically connect to the internet and let the app function. So underneath each app, you will see how much data has been used by that particular app over the current cycle. And that cycle will depend on how long it's been since you've reset this function. So you can basically reset it today and check it in 30 days' time, or 7 days, however often you like to do this. And it will tell you how much data these particular apps are using over the billing cycle. And if you scroll through, you might just find a couple in there that are using a little bit more data than others. So it might be wise to maybe switch that off or delete the app altogether if you're not using it anymore. And down the bottom, it'll give you an aggregate amount of how much data you have used from all of your apps over the current cycle. So that might just come in handy if, yes, you have had a bill that's been astronomically high and you're thinking, look, I haven't changed my usage habits. You might just have a rogue app in the background that's running that you might not be aware of. So with that, let's transition over to this week's featured guest. Well, I'm excited to introduce our guest today, Gary Pittard, the Managing Director of the Pittard Training Group, a leading real estate training and development organization. With more than 30 years' experience working with the best sales and leadership minds in the world, Gary has developed an acute awareness of the subtleties of human communication and influence and the constant requirement for innovation and reinvention to stay relevant in a rapidly changing market. Gary, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Josh.
Well, I've given our listeners just a brief overview, Gary, but take a minute, tell us a little bit more about you personally and then give us an overview of your business.
Sure, Josh. At Pittard, I have over 30 years, probably close to 35 years in sales and sales management, a large chunk of that in real estate. And at Pittard, we work with about 130 or so agencies across Australia and New Zealand. They're extremely profitable. I was interested in the recent Real Estate Business Magazine top 100 agents, and I looked at that, and there were none of our people in there because none of them put their names in. But we're looking at that with my financial controller, and I thought, gee, we'd have a large number of people who would have made the top 20. So very profitable agencies. Some of them have been with us for 20 years, so extremely profitable. You wouldn't know them because we don't they don't badge Pittard. We just quietly work behind, trying to help them make more profit, find good salespeople. We help them with their marketing. We help them. We help them with every facet of their business. We have a complete business system for the running of a profitable real estate agency. It's called the Agency Profit System. That forms the backbone of what we of the work that we do with our leaders. And from there, we help leaders with leadership, sales with sales, people with prospecting. You know, any kind of skill that a salesperson needs, we help them with that. Anything that a leader needs to help them make a more profitable business, we help them with that.
Well, just before we press record, Gary, you were telling me a little bit about your recent trip overseas. How was that for you? Did you enjoy the trip?
Yeah, I had a month and 10 kilos in Italy.
Well, yeah. Gary, for those who aren't familiar with your background in sales, can you describe your very first job in sales and how you found this wonderful world of real estate eventually?
Like a lot of people, if you'd asked me when I went to school, did I want to be a salesperson? No, I would have said no, absolutely no idea. I actually drifted into sales. I'd been overseas. We'd lived overseas in London for about 3 years. Came back and I was just working. I was working driving a courier truck and just something to get a bit of money in while I figured out what I wanted to do. And I was over visiting an old friend, and he said, you know, what do you plan on doing with your life? And I said, look, really, I don't know. And he just looked at me and said, you're going into sales. That's what you're going to do. And he didn't even ask. He just flicked open the phone book. There's an old fashioned implement. Looked up a phone number and rang this guy and said, I've got a bloke. I want you to talk to him about working with you. And it was selling photocopiers. So I went for the interview. Got changed into my suit in the back of the truck. went for the interview and next thing you know, I was selling photocopiers. Had absolutely no idea, But I had a sales manager, and he said, now when you go in to meet the New South Wales manager, he said, look him straight in the eye, answer him truthfully. But this guy, you know, when I started with him, he said, the first lesson he said, if you think that you're going to sit here and just wait for leads to walk in the door, you're in the wrong business. He said, you're a salesman. And he said, if you're going to be a salesman, you're going to go out and look for business. If you're going to sit here and wait for business, you're an order taker, and I don't want order takers working here. So that was the kind of environment that I started in. And, you know, they cared enough about you to tell you the hard truths. So I started working, so I started selling copiers, and wasn't the flashiest of starts, but I started to get pretty good at it, and you know, good enough to be given a larger territory with more top end clients, and then eventually became the sales manager of their consumables department, so paper and toner and all of those kind of things. So I started to at that stage work with people and building a team.
Mm. Well, having known you for a couple of years, Gary, a story that sticks out in my mind as a true lesson in sales is the story you've told many times about when you were selling photocopiers many years ago, and a colleague had some words of wisdom for you as to how he was making more sales than his competitors with a product that wasn't nearly as fancy as his competitors. Can you give our listeners an insight into this story? Because I think there's some valuable lessons there for people, especially in real estate, and what agents can learn from it, in your opinion.
You're talking, I think, about Bill Smith.
Okay,
and he was the real name, and a Kiwi, and he was the number one salesperson in this company, and he had a city territory, and a lot of people sort of said, well, you've got the city territory, so you must you've got all this business just falling out of the sky. But with the city territory came some extremely tough competition. And we were dry powder copiers were coming in, and we had still liquid toner, so it was old fashioned technology, but he was selling these as though they were the latest models. I mean, you looked at his figures and they were just stunning. Anyway, we got these new photocopiers, and at that stage I had a small territory, a suburban territory, and so there was not a lot of call for these high end machines. But when I was given the more senior territory, I suddenly had these clients that had bigger that had a demand for bigger machines. Now I was selling this new top end machine, and in those days we were up against the Canon 7550, and this Canon did double-sided copying. It did color, margin shift. It just did absolutely everything, and it was about $7,000 cheaper than ours.
Wow!
At its base price, and so I could not. I could not sell one of these high-end machines for love nor money. So I spoke to Bill Smith, and this guy is extremely busy, but he's a really decent guy, and he was so easy to get to speak to. All you had to do was be there at 7 in the morning or 8 o'clock at night, and Bill would sit there with you. Bill would sit there, would hardly even look at you during the day. But if you were there early in the morning or there late at night, Bill would give you so much of your time. So late at night one day I was sitting there with him and I said, listen, Bill, you're selling these machines like Smarties, you know, these 4790s of ours. You're selling these machines like Smarties. How do you do it? And he just said, and this to me was when you heard this guy talking, he didn't jam his advice down your throat. He didn't make a whole lot of statements. What he said, Josh, was he just started to ask questions. And he said, Gary, what do you charge for the 4790? And I told him the way we charged machines in those days was the marketing department gave you a base price and whatever, so you couldn't go below that. But whatever you sold over that, you got 50% off. We just called it overs. So if you sold it for $2,000 over the base price, you got $1,000. If you sold it for $10,000 over the base price, you got, as a salesperson, $5,000. We're working commission only. Now, you can argue the ethics of that these days, but you know, we didn't know any better. And so anyway, he said, what are you charging for the 4790? And I think I told him something in the vicinity of $2,000 over the price. So maybe I was going to get $1,000 out of the machine. And he said, okay. So he said, you're still about $8,000 dearer than the Canon. All right. And he said, next question, what does the secretary earn? Now, I just looked at him and said, huh? Yeah, what does the secretary earn?
Sure. A bit of a strange question. Yeah.
Yeah, I said, I don't know. And he said, 18 cents a minute. So we're going back a fair way, obviously.
Sure.
18 cents a minute. And then he said, okay, now let me ask you another question. When you look at, compare the dashboard of our copier to the Canon, you know, what do you notice? And I said, well, theirs does a lot more than ours does. And he said, yes. So there's a lot more buttons, would you say? And I went, yes. And so he said, so if there's a lot more buttons, would you say that it's a lot more complicated? And I said, yeah. And he said, so okay, if you look at the cost per copy, you know, we're at 6 cents, Canon's at 4 cents. I mean, they beat us on everything. But he said, if you allow the fact that it's more complicated, you've got a secretary that stands there for 2 minutes to try and figure out how much, what button to press, then that's 36 cents plus 4 cents. Now it's 40 cents per copy. And he said, and if the secretary presses the wrong button, then you can see what happens, that the cost can blow right out. And then you take an executive who could be a dollar a minute standing there, and then we have a whole different story. So he said, with complication comes an increase in operating costs indirectly through the wages of people standing there trying to figure out how to work it. He said, so that's why it's important you know how much a secretary is worth. He said, here's what I do. I charge $15,000 over the asking price.
Wow.
So I take it way out of the Canon range. And then I sell on why this is a more robust machine, a simpler machine, why it is that much better than the Canon. Because it's, you pay more, but you get so much more by way of a more reliable machine, much simpler, easy to use, and therefore you'll pay it back by the saving on the labour of the operators, the labour costs of the operators. And it just turned on all the lights for me, Josh. I went out there and I thought, right, I'm going to get more in overs than you, and I ended up selling one for 16,000 in overs. and you know what? He patted me on the back and he said, congratulations. You know, he just wished nothing but the best for you, and he was so proud, and so was I. But you know what? Ever since then, I've never, ever, ever given any thought to discounting, and I've always sold the quality of what we do and used that to show value in what we charge. So fee, value for what you're charging. And I just learned that lesson in those early days, and I've never looked back, never discounted.
I think that is such a great story, Gary, and thanks for sharing it again. I've heard it a couple of times, but for those who are listening who are thinking, look, how does that apply to me? And if they're thinking in their mind at the moment of scripts and dialogues they have in place and that sort of thing to combat objection over fee discounting and that sort of thing, what would you say to those people where to start in how to figure out their own, I guess, analogy of or taking from the story you've just shared? What can they take from it, do you think?
Well, I'll take another step. I had a friend who was selling an MGA car and he couldn't sell it at the price. I said, we can put the price up. And I told him the story, the Bill Smith story. Mm. And he ended up selling it at a higher price more easily than he could sell it at a lower price. Mm. You take that to a salesperson. You take it to a rental department, property management. You know, it's sometimes when you've got agents, I mean, what's the lowest fee you've ever heard an agent charge, Josh?
For property management or sales?
Yeah, for sales.
Look, I think up in Queensland, yeah, up until recently with the deregulation of commissions, sort of around 2%.
Yeah, so you've had the fixed fee up until recently.
That's right, yeah.
Okay, well, I've heard plenty of times 1%, okay? But I've heard before of somebody a person who sold a property for nothing, and I thought that was just ludicrous because he got the vendor paid advertising and he said it was a prestige property, so it made me look good in the area. You know, here I was selling this prestige property. So he did it for nothing.
Wow.
But the worst one I ever heard was a guy over in Hunters Hill. And he said, and he actually paid $30,000 to get the listing. And when I looked at him in astonishment, he said, Gary, where are you going to get $60,000 advertising? Because it had 60,000 vendor paid advertising. Where are you going to get $60,000 for $30,000 expenditure? And I said, yeah, but where's the fee at the end of the day? Mm. Where's the profit? So you see, what happens is if a person is lower skilled, they very quickly get to money. Now, sometimes when you've got agents and they're all and you've got them all charging about 1%, and a seller says, "Oh, this one will do it for $20,000," but the other agent will do it for $15,000. As soon as money becomes involved, what it really means is the seller can't tell the difference between you and your competitors. So therefore, they're cutting away at the fee. And yet, what happens with cars? If it was all about money, everybody would drive, I don't know, what's the cheapest car on the road? Oh, let's say a Daewoo. I don't know. My apologies to Daewoo drivers. But let's say, why don't they all drive Daewoos? Why do people drive Mercedes, BMWs? Why do they buy Rolls Royces and Bentleys? It's not about the money. It's about other things. Now, sometimes when you're trying to scratch out at a similar fee to a competitor, you're better off being more expensive and showing them why you are worth that money. Likewise with property management. Mm-hmm. Now, if the others are charging 7%, charge 11% and show me why you're worth that extra $20, $30 a week. Mm-hmm. Show me what you're going to give me for the money. Mm-hmm. Show me why I need that, and then I'll pay for it.
Well, in your opinion, Gary, how important are sales skills in all aspects of real estate, of a real estate team? And what lessons do you think are there for people such as property managers or even receptionists, you know, everyone in a real estate business?
You're going to fly Sydney to Melbourne. Do you want your pilots to have skill?
Definitely.
Okay, right. You go to the doctor. You want your doctor to have skill?
Absolutely.
You're going to put a large part of your financial well-being into somebody else's hands to get them to sell it for it. Do you want them to have skill?
Yeah.
Okay, so really, Josh, if somebody had studied negotiation, would you believe that they would have a greater chance of getting you a higher price than somebody that has not studied negotiation?
Most likely, yeah.
Right. Okay, so therefore, the more skill in negotiation your salesperson has, the greater chance you have of getting the highest price. Does it stand to reason?
Sure.
Okay, so if I could convince you then that I am the best negotiator you can have, would you engage me to sell your property?
Yes.
And since I'm going to get you more money, would you pay me a bit more than an agent that lacks skill?
Sure.
So the only thing I've got to convince you of really is whether I'm capable of getting you a higher price than any of my competitors. Is that right?
Yeah, you've completely removed price as an objection altogether.
I've completely removed the prices. I've completely removed how I'm going to find a buyer for you. I've completely removed everything else. Really, all I've got to convince you of is that I know what I'm doing. Mm. And that comes down to anything, really. Ever gone to a doctor, you're not feeling well. After a couple of questions from the doctor, you start to feel as though you're in good hands. Mm. And this is what we've got to make, this is what we've got to convince people, is that we're not like every other salesperson out there, that we are a skilled negotiator, and in our hands they're going to get more money than they would if they went to a competitor. Mm. That's really what they want. Mm. They want to sell the property with the least amount of stress and get the highest possible price. I've just fired a property manager. And the reason I fired the property manager was because they were deducting money for the fees, for the rates, but they didn't pay them. And so I got slapped with $1,000 rate arrears. I've never not paid bills in my life. Mm. And there wasn't enough money to cover the account, to cover the rates. And you didn't contact me and ask me to put some money in. Why? Mm.
Mm.
And so those people, I'm even wondering if there's not a bit of misappropriation going on. You know, mm-hmm. you just start to wonder all these different things, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a lack of communication. Well, that's skill. Mm-hmm. There's a lack of follow up. They don't want to tell you bad news, so they hide. Mm-hmm. This comes down to skill and selling skills.
Mm-hmm.
So whether it's a property manager or whether it's a salesperson, it's your skill that determines whether you get a high fee.
Mm-hmm.
It's a skill that determines whether people are going to listen to you and follow your advice. It's skill that determines whether they're going to abuse you for delivering bad news or thank you for delivering it because you've told them the truth.
Mm.
It's all down to skill, isn't it?
Well, it is. And I think at the end of the day, Gary, and I've heard you sort of bring this up a couple of times. I'm sort of paraphrasing you here when you say that, you know, at the end of the day, property managers are really selling things like maintenance to landlords, and they're selling things like their arrears processes for how they handle arrears with their tenants and that sort of thing. So at the end of the day, that what they're doing is sales.
Shannon Davis, who's got a great rental department in
great friend of ours, lovely guy.
Yeah. Well, Shannon said, you know, what we've got to do as property managers is just convince the sellers convince the landlords that it wasn't us, the property managers, who punched the hole in the wall.
Mm. Mm.
So don't get angry with us. I'm just telling you this situation, and also let's work out what we've got to do to fix the situation. See, that, it takes skill to put that across in such a way. Mm. Even by being on the back foot, I've got some bad news to tell you. Now, that immediately puts somebody on the defense and can make them react angrily.
Mm.
Whereas if you come at it on the front foot and just say, look, there's some things we need to discuss. Have you got time now? And then on the front foot, you just come and say, look, there's been a bit of damage to the property caused by the tenant. And explain the situation and say, this is what I think we should do about it. Mm. I think the cost would be about such and such. Are you okay with that?
Mm.
It's a completely different approach, isn't it? It's all selling skills.
Look, absolutely. And if I can share a personal story, Gary, and this I would have to thank you for this, having been worked in an office for many years up here in Brisbane that was following your training. And essentially every Friday, the property management team would sit down with the sales team and we would role play through certain objections. 51 ways to lose a listing, if I'm not mistaken? Yeah. And so we would role play with the sales team, but also we would, that the sales team would role play objections that we would get. So we would share these, come right down to things like selling maintenance to a landlord or the arrears processes, things like that, even as far as the business development activity, so prospecting and things like that. So I found that absolutely invaluable as a property manager many, many years ago. But what would you say to a business owner who has a property management and a sales department? What are the benefits, in your opinion, of getting those two departments together to work in collaboration like that?
You've got to keep people of similar skill levels together, mm-hmm. I think. And if you take a top salesperson and have them train with the rookies all the time, they're almost going to feel it's beneath them. So you've got to sort of, if you're going to start off with basic skills, I'd start property managers who might never have learned any selling skill. I'd start them off with my rookies who were learning selling skills. So everybody sort of comes up together. But if you take your high flyers and you put them into a basic selling course with property managers, they're just going to be tapping the table. And so you got to sort of keep in mind your audience.
Mm, mm.
That's important. But certainly there's a lot of our offices that bring their property managers to our 3-day sales seminar, Winning Ways.
Mm, mm.
And, they bring them there because basic selling skills is what they need. And this is why we did the joint venture with you and with Nathan Brett at Real Estate Dynamics a few years ago, selling skills for property managers and BDMs, because we wanted to teach property managers and business development managers the importance of sales in their day-to-day roles.
Gary, I want to now turn the spotlight onto moments of your career in real estate that have made you who you are today. And we often hear the 20,000-foot view of someone's success in real estate, but here on the Real Estate Pros podcast, we want to take it down to that ground level of actual moments in time, whether you've failed or succeeded. So with that in mind, can you tell us a story, take us there with you, of a moment in your real estate journey of where you felt like you'd failed? Tell us what happened and how it made you feel.
What about when I tell you, instead of where I felt like I failed, where I actually really did fail?
Sure.
Monumentally. How about that?
I'd love to hear it.
Let's talk about the start of my real estate career. I was selling copiers, and by this stage I was sales manager of another company. One of my salespeople had a presentation to do to a real estate agent, and I said to him, "Look, why don't you knock off early? She's close to home. She sold my property for our house for us a few years before, so I know her." And I said, "So why don't I go and make the sale for you, and you go home early, and I'll finish up closer to home." "Oh, beauty, thanks a lot." So I went and did this presentation to this agent, sold her the copier, and she said, "You should be in real estate." And you know, there's absolutely no idea of doing this. When somebody talks to you about an opportunity, you always ask more questions, or you should. And I said, "Oh yeah, well, what are you thinking?" And she told me that she was thinking about opening an office, and would I like to go in as partner. Now, I'd never listed a property. I knew how to sell, but I'd never listed a property. So I was talked to my wife about it, and it wasn't long before I ended up going into business with her, thinking that she had all the knowledge of real estate. And I opened up this business from scratch, never having listed a property, made a lot of really stupid mistakes. And I'm talking fixed costs, you know, leases and things like that, which meant that I had probably, you know, back in those days, $30,000 a month in expenses before you put the key in the door at the beginning of a month, right in the middle of the recession of the early 90s, with absolutely no skill in selling real estate. So it was a whole lot of really stupid things, all compounded. So as a result of that, I never got the business off the ground. I did list properties, and I'd like to pride myself on the fact that I've never signed up an open listing or an open or general listing in my life. Never discounted my fee. I just wasn't making enough fees to cover the bills, and I didn't have time to learn. But fortunately, what I did in those days, which is something that I've always done, and I had done it before, and it was a habit, was I sought out winners. So I spoke to a lot of people in the group that we were part of in those early days, and I met a lot of good people, and I got a lot of good advice. But the long and the short of it was, I really needed to close that business down, and we paid out all the small creditors, because they're always the ones that get ignored, and I paid them all out, and then it took 10 years to dig out of that hole, and I went and worked in a real estate office and sold real estate and learned how to do it properly. So what I don't mind people knowing that, because as you say, you know, you often hear, "Oh, look at us." I think people need to know that you've failed, because it's not the fact that you've failed; it's what you've done about it. I see that it's been critically important, and I say to my clients, because I can sniff somebody that's about to make a stupid mistake in a real estate office, and I can say, "What you're about to do led to me losing $511,000. You can have this knowledge for a lot less than that, but what do you want to do? Do you want to do it the easy way and the hard way? And the hardest way is to jack your company up with a whole lot of fixed costs so that you've got a massively high break-even point. And you need to make a lot of sales just to get over your break even. And a lot of people listening to this, you know, ask yourself: are you making much money out of your sales department right now? You know, are you making much profit? And if you're not, it's two reasons: incompetent salespeople, so a team that's not as competent as it could be, and probably too high fixed costs. It'll be those two things.
Well, just recently, Gary, thank you for sharing that story. I think it's a valuable one for our listeners. If I can share one of my own, when I was in the US just recently at a conference over there, Gary, and I was meeting, having breakfast with a gentleman who was a venture capitalist funding all sorts of tech startup companies and that sort of thing. And he was telling me a story about someone that they had invested in a few years before, close to $20 million. in this technology startup company in Silicon Valley up there near San Francisco. And he ran the company into the ground and lost all that money. And someone across the table said, well, you'll never invest in him again, will you? And he said, are you kidding? He just taught himself a $20 million lesson. He's going to make that back tenfold. So absolutely, I'll invest in him again. And I think combined with your story, I think the lesson for anyone starting their own real estate business is to understand the business side of running a business. And I don't. I think that's something that a lot of salespeople moving into the business of their own leadership role tend to forget sometimes. And it's certainly a valuable lesson that you learned, wasn't it?
Look, you know, really, Josh, it's It's easy just to. I mean, I'd had a couple of successful businesses before that, and I'd worked with some good people in the two multinational companies that I'd worked with as well. I had a pretty reasonable idea of certain things, but I really didn't have the idea of the fixed costs. Mm. You know, it's too easy to say yes to everything, and I'm a salesman, so I'm a salesperson, so I'm a tap on the head. You know, I'll arrive at a sale with my own pen. You know, but it's too easy to say no to everything as well. Any fool can say no to everything. There's a lot of real estate principals that do that. They say no, 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 no. And what they do is they stifle their company's growth. Mm. But you can say yes, 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 yes too often, and you end up with a whole lot of costs that you just haven't got a chance of breaking even. You go broke as well. Mm. So I learned a lot. I learned a lot from that. But, you know, I look back now and I think it's amazing that I do what I do today because of the situation I got myself back in 30 years ago. It's amazing how you end up going off in a direction that you would never have probably gone on had you not had this adversity earlier on. So I don't mind. I don't try and cover it up. You know, sometimes one of my favorite competitors says, "Oh, he's never run a successful business." Well, actually, that's not true. I had run successful businesses, and I run one today. Mm. I've got a glitch in my career that helped make me what I am today. Mm. You know, it was interesting. I was you talk about relationships, you know, and I've had partners over business partners over my life, but you know, my wife Kerry, we've been together We just celebrated 39 years marriage. We've been together 40 something years.
Congratulations.
No, yeah, she's a lucky girl. That's why we went to Italy.
Right, you know, right.
Well, we just thought, yeah, we just have a month together. But no, she followed me into this business because she just has and had total faith. Mm-hmm. And you know, the other part of it was when it went pear-shaped, I said to her, "I think I might go back and sell photocopiers." And she just looked at me and she said, "Gaz, you've got a lot of money invested in a real estate career. Don't you think it'd be better to recoup that investment?" Mm. One line from a very wise person. Mm. And I went, "You know what? You're dead right." And that was one of the best. That was one of the best business decisions I ever made. You know, just one line. She doesn't even remember saying it, but taught me a lot of things that day. A friend of mine died a few years ago. Bede Donovan used to say, "Don't quit before the miracle happens." Mm. And she just put me straight back on that real estate path with that one line, and I put my head down, and it's been wonderful for my family. You know, it took us 10 years to dig out of the hole that I dug for us, but at the same time, it's the lessons that I learned, what it did for my persistence. We were coming up to 40 years old, you know, and it's a lot of time when you think, oh gee, we're broken 40, but I tell you what, the next 10 years that followed, once we consolidated, the things that we learned about, especially about financial management, set us up for the rest of our lives. I look at my goals. I went to a Tom Hopkins seminar back in the early 80s, and I set some goals. And I set goals that went. Have you ever seen it? One year, 5 years.
I think you actually shared these at a one of your seminars many years ago, Gary.
Win.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And I looked at it and I set the goals. When I set the goals were for when I was finished at 62 years old, which is how old I am now. And I looked back and I thought, you know, back then we were doing financially, we were financially okay. We hadn't got into financial trouble. Mm. And I set these goals when we're in a good financial position. And I certainly didn't put in there go broke.
Well, I think you had a Maserati on the shopping list from memory.
I did have a Maserati. Yeah. I did have a Maserati. And you know what I drive now? A motor scooter. There you go.
Fantastic.
Because you know what? The ego, the ego of 60 is not the same as the ego of 30.
Right.
But you know, the other part about it was, but if I'd have achieved those goals, I would have sold myself short. You know, and I couldn't have imagined at 30 what my life would be like at 60. And I imagine with everything going perfectly, this is where I'd be. But if we'd have achieved those goals, I'd have sold myself short. It's amazing. And it's amazing what you learn from the lessons.
Look, absolutely. And something that we did very early on in the piece, Gary, when we launched our business, and it's only very recent, so October 2014, something that I've always had a belief in is mentors and coaches. And yeah. Having grown up around a sport all my life, I've always seen value in having a third party. You know, the old saying that it's hard to see the picture when you're in the frame, it's something that my dad said to me when I was a young kid. So it's always been something that stuck with me. So when we launched the business, we engaged with a business coach, and I had a mentor who sort of helped me through some of the more personal challenges with becoming a business owner. And I'm keen to hear your thoughts from someone in the real estate space as well. What's your opinion of coaches and mentors and things like that for not just business owners, but for salespeople and property managers and everyone else in the business as well?
Probably a conflict of interest because I am one. But look, you know, it's like I said to you, what led me to talk to Bill Smith all those years ago? Yeah. He was a winner. But not only a winner, really decent guy. Mm. You know, in that company, there were maybe 60 salespeople back in the days of selling photocopiers. Bill Smith was number one, and I liked him a lot. Number two, no, not so much. And number three, I liked him enormously as well. So I used to spend my time, and I got advice from numbers one and three. Number two wasn't leading the kind of life I wanted to lead. And I think that there's a tendency to get overawed by somebody because of the money they make. But that's not the only yardstick for success. In fact, it should be the least. I mean, I don't want to take advice from somebody who's poor. But you know, I learned back at the time I went broke. You know, I was looking down the business end of 40. I learned, you know, I was talking to somebody who was a financial planner, and he said, "I admire your attitude, Gary." And I said, "Really, really, Bob, what are we trained for?" Now, there's a saying that says, in calm waters, every ship has a good captain. Mm. We train for the tough times. Mm. Mm. We don't train for the easy times. Mm. You know, and so when things started to go wrong, my training kicked in. Mm. And I started to sit down and I started to talk to people that could help me out of the hole. One guy was Bill Nasby, the Canadian sales trainer. And I set goals based on what Bill Nasby told me to do. And I'd mucked around with goals for years. But I got serious about it because my back was to the wall and I had to. And so I spent a lot of time talking to Bill Nasby. Seek out winners and follow their advice, but just understand that people change over time too. Mm. It's not just about the money they make, it's about the life they live. Mm. Mm. And you know, I know some people who I've never ever seen them put money ahead of their values, but I've seen other people that'll compromise their values if there's a dollar involved. Mm, mm. I don't want to take advice from people like that.
Mm. I think in real estate, especially, Gary, a lot of people have said on this show, particularly, we'll get to that question in a little while. But when you know what prevents people in real estate from achieving success, a lot of them have mentioned ego, and I think ego can get in the road for not just business owners, but salespeople, property managers, everyone in the business. When they are in the mindset of this is how we've always done it, and very, very short-sighted in that regard. And you shared some lessons that you learned very quickly when you launched that real estate business. You know, but having had a business coach at the start, I would hazard a guess that may have been a different outcome for you.
Oh, totally. Yeah, totally. And, You know, I mean, there's no doubt, because you know what, really, having the business coach is one thing, listening to them is another. Because correct. If you've got rampant ego, your ego is not going to let you listen.
Mm.
And I wonder back then whether my ego, I've got no doubt that my ego got me into trouble. I say me, I don't say we, meaning my wife as well. It was me. Mm. It was my ego that was out of control that led me to go into the big flashy car, the leases, the whole, you know, the what do they call it, the $100,000 chair, you know, the managing director chair.
Yes.
That you sit in and don't seem to get out and do as much work, all of those kinds of things. And I think, you know, I mean, people get ask advice sometimes, and then the next thing you know, they're telling you what they do. That's ego.
Mm.
You know, so if you want advice, this is what I do. I do my best to bite my tongue, shut up and listen, and then think it through and then act.
Mm.
Because if ego gets involved, before you know it, you'll be defending what you do rather than listening to the advice you've just asked for.
Mm.
Got to be very careful of that. Well, certainly I did. The other thing too, Josh, is remember that over time people change, and today's winner could be tomorrow's whiner. I've just severed a relationship with somebody that I was very close to and respected and loved enormously for 25 years. The relationship turned toxic, and I didn't want to be around that kind of person anymore. The hardest thing I've ever had to do in my entire life. It was even harder than going broke. But sometimes the person that was is not the person they are today. And you've got to look at that too when you're taking advice.
Mm.
Take it all into account, because the person you might have been following in the 90s might not be the person that you're following today.
Mm.
And I've been a great believer in just getting that toxicity out of my life.
Mm.
And I'm not going to for a second say that it's easy, but people change, and not always for the better. So you just got to keep reviewing your relationships throughout your life.
Well, Gary, let's take it to the other end of the spectrum. Can you tell us a story of a moment in your real estate career where you felt like the formula you had in place was the right way to go about growing a real estate business? And again, take us there with you of a moment in time. What happened? What was going through your mind, and how did that make you feel?
We've been Pittard for over 10 years, but I've been involved in this business that we now, you know, that we've owned for 10 years for closer to 25. But just in the last quarter of last year, so the last 3.5 months of 2014, this for us was this is what we accomplished as a team, and it was a massive change in our business that we'd done nothing like it for 20 years, but this is just what we did in 3.5 months. We completely rewrote our real estate agency business system. So our agency profit system was born, wrote it from the ground up. We streamlined our hiring system to the point now where our leaders can meet somebody and make them an offer of employment within 7 days and get them up and running and to a winning standard in a breathtakingly quick time. So there's nothing like this hiring system in the industry. It was written during this reinvention process. Virtually nothing of our old system remained. Now, Josh, the last time I rewrote that management system, it took me 9 months. But we accomplished all of this in 3.5 months. We rewrote all of the marketing material and our marketing strategies for our officers to use at the same time. We introduced and ran our first careers information webinar for our officers, and now we run those on a regular basis. So our officers can market to people that might be interested in a career in real estate. And regularly now I talk to them for an hour about what a wonderful career real estate is. At the same time, we introduced online coaching for our officers, and we now conduct 3 coaching sessions for our member salespeople per week. So we've got Fast Start for new recruits, we've got Course Correction for salespeople who are having trouble, and we've got New Level for established salespeople who are already doing well that want to take their performance to a new level.
Mm.
So we've got a dedicated coach, Samantha Pettifi, who just trains those people. At the same time, we hosted what many people said was our best ever annual 3-day convention and awards night. At the same time, we engaged Dr. Dennis Waitley to present our leadership conference on the 15th and 16th of June in 2015, so in next month. So we engaged Dennis Waitley, which to me was like having Michael Bublé sing at your birthday party. I'm a long-time fan. We set up training in Southeast Asia, and during that time, so we planned it all. We booked our seminars, and then I presented those in February. But we moved into Southeast Asia during this 3.5 months of our reinvention. Mm. We rebuilt our website from the ground up, so we were mobile friendly long before Google announced its change to its search algorithms, which they did just recently. We rebranded Pittard, so Pittard Training Group went. Now we're Pittard with complete brand new modern branding. Mm-hmm. We bought premises in Ultimo. We completely fitted it out, and we moved at the same time. And then we conceptualized, built, and launched our training streaming portal, iTrain. So we got that off and managed to get it started up and running with bug free.
That's great.
And then on top of all that, Josh, we had a lot of fun. You know, I've never been more proud of any team that I've ever worked with than I am of this team that I have now. And we did all of that in 3.5 months. It was 18 months work in 3.5 months.
Wow. And I think what that comes down to, and what the lesson I take from what you're doing today, Gary, is an old saying that, you know, a leader can write the music, but it's up to the staff to play it or to learn how to play it. And essentially what you've done is you've written a lot of music and you've now given it to your officers, but it's really up to them to how they use that and how they play that to make it sound fantastic. So is there an office in particular or a story that sticks out of one of your members in particular that is just going fantastically at the moment that you're really proud of?
But I don't have permission to I haven't asked them whether sure. to I can use their name, but I want to talk about their profits.
Sure.
But there's an office in Melbourne at the moment. 2 months in a row, it's just exceeded $500,000 per month above break even for 2 months in a row.
Wow.
Okay, this is what I'm saying about a lot of our offices that are that would absolutely blitz the top 20 of the real estate business online top 100. But so 2 months in a row where they've each month they've exceeded $500,000 above their break even. And I look at this office and people go, oh, yeah, well, it's booming in Melbourne. Well, yeah, you know what? It is. But it's not booming for every agency in this area. There's no other agency in the area that's made $500,000 a month profit each month for 2 months in a row. And why? Because they've got a top team, they've got a great culture, and they've got fantastic marketing, and they also care about their community, and they've been active for a long, long time. You know, they're a fine example. If I just look at our top 30, our top 30 offices are averaging something in the vicinity of $80,000 a month per office above break even, and most of them don't have principals who list and sell. Now they have sales teams that get the listings and sales for them. So I look at it's very easy for us to find offices that we work with that we're proud of, because they're doing some amazing things. And look, I don't claim credit for that. You know, we're a training company, and we train offices that don't succeed, and they've all got the same manuals on the shelves. You know, they've all got the same opportunities to come to training. Some do and some don't.
Well, Gary, thank you so much for your input so far. We're about to hit the fast five, where I'll ask you five quick questions and get you to come back with five quick answers. But before we do, let's hear our fast fact of the week. This week's fast fact comes from the Steps Real Estate Industry Social Media Survey, where we interviewed real estate professionals from all around the country about how they use social media right now. We found that 63% of real estate professionals are not paying to promote their content on social media. With so few people paying to promote their content while organic reach continues to decline, I think there is a great opportunity for you to start considering how paid social media can form part of your overall digital marketing strategy. I'm keen to hear what's working for you. Drop me a line via our website, Facebook, or Twitter. Well, Gary, we've reached one of my favourite parts of the show, where I'll ask you five quick questions and get you to come back with five quick answers. Are you ready?
Sure.
Who is one person who has been an inspiration to you throughout your career and why?
Okay, Ray Iacono, I-A-C-O-N-O, Ray Iacono. He became the CEO of Triumph Adler while I was there as the New South Wales sales manager. What I liked about Ray was he kept a good eye on expenses without being stupidly stingy. But Ray was a straight shooter, and you knew where you stood. steadfastly kept his word. So if Ray said something was going to happen, you believed him. So he was the first leader I ever worked with that I respected. So I still hear from him from time to time and respect him enormously. I'd also like to throw in Michael Johnston. He's my friend and a leader that I have the privilege of working with every day. And Michael's another person who does what he says he's going to do, and he'll never put earning a dollar above doing what's right. And we don't always agree, but I think anyone who discounts Jono's advice in my book's a fool.
Gary, what is your favourite thing in the world to do when you're not at the office?
That's easy. Go to Patonga. You know, I got a little place up at Patonga, and it's just up on Broken Bay, so it's about an hour.
Just north of Sydney, isn't it?
North of Sydney, yeah. It's just take the Gosford turn off and come down through Woi Woi, your minor, and the road finishes at Patonga. But to quote the brain surgeon Charlie Teo, who's got a place there, he said, you can feel the stress rolling off as you drive down the hill into town.
I love that.
You recently interviewed Gavin Croft, which was a great interview, by the way, from Greswich Whitney.
Oh, yeah, thanks, Gary. Yeah, no, lovely guy.
Yeah. And he and his family have been up there, and I think they'll vouch for me about the delights of Patonga as well. I just love the place.
I can't wait for the invite, Gary. Thanks.
Anytime you're in town, my friend.
Fantastic. Well, Gary, what is your favourite business book that you've ever read and why?
This might be better described as a life book than a business book, but it's... But if your life's right, then most likely business will be as well. It's Pulling Your Own Strings, Pulling Your Own Strings by Dr. Wayne Dyer. I read it 30 years ago. I've read it a lot of times since, but it's a marvellous book on relationship and dealing with people, whether they're close to you or whether they're strangers. Fantastic book. You know, dealing with toxic people, dealing with manipulative people, dealing with hard customers, dealing with yourself, actually, so that you don't allow yourself to become one of life's victims. Marvellous book.
Gary, what is your favourite technology or online resource that you use daily to help you run a better business?
iTrain for starters. You know, because with our online streaming portal, I can now record something. We can have it to our members same day. So that I use a lot. But also I also use Evernote. So these days, if you were to see my desk, you know what you'd see on my desk, Josh? Wood.
Oh well, I was going to say nothing, Gary.
Not much. it's all just it's probably Laminex actually. But what I do is everything goes into Evernote. So I've got an email that I might want to check later, send it to, or refer to at another point, send it to Evernote. I see something interesting, take a photograph of it. Even expenses, everything just goes into Evernote. It's got handwriting recognition, so optical character recognition, so that I can find things that I've written and taken a photo of. I can find it to recognise as my handwriting. From a training perspective, I get a good idea. I used to put it in journals. I've got 44 journals in my safe. But, these days now I've scanned them all, sent them to Evernote. I've got them all in the cloud, and all these ideas are just there at my fingertips. So Evernote, from a collection of great ideas perspective, working on long-term projects, it's a marvellous thing. And the other thing I use is Dropbox. I don't have anything on hard drives that doesn't automatically go to Dropbox now, so everything's in the cloud. So I love those. I love the 21st century, got to tell you.
Gary, it's often said that the success of a real estate business is measured by how many properties they sell or how many properties they manage. If you had to choose one thing, just one, that prevents people in real estate from achieving success however they want to measure it, what would it be, and what would your advice be to overcome it?
Biggest complaint, if you look at the top three complaints that real estate leaders and salespeople make, Josh, number one, it's different in my area, which is an excuse, okay? Number two, you can't find good people, leaders say, also an excuse. The third thing leaders say is that salespeople lack focus. You can't get them to focus on the winning actions. Now, focus, lack of, is a huge problem. I believe that the reason people work 5 and 6 days a week, or they only work 5 days and they don't get much in the way of results, is because they waste a lot of time not working on dollar productive activities. So focus is the number one challenge that a salesperson faces, and the owner of a real estate business having unfocused salespeople is the number one challenge they face, apart from finding winners. But so what causes a lack of focus? Simply clear written goals. We need to be working on a better life. You're going somewhere. Where is it? Close your eyes and mark time. Just walk on the spot and keep your eyes shut. I bet it won't be long before you bang into a table. You do not stand still. You're either going forwards, backwards, sideways. So you're going somewhere, but if you don't decide where that is by way of clear written goals, you will always lack focus. Now, if you lack focus, you know what will happen? You won't be working on the important activities such as finding new business, following up clients, and likewise with property managers, following up landlords. Without focus, you'll end up working on the routine. Because you know why? The routine doesn't reject you. Knock on a door and somebody slams the door in your face, you've put yourself in rejection's way. But work on the routine, no one's going to slam a door in your face, but you're not going to get any business either. So without focus, you will end up just working on what's comfortable, non-productive activities, and the cause of that is a lack of goals. And for me, that is the missing link in a salesperson's success. What's the big picture? What are you working towards? And if we're not working towards a better life, then we're just doing routine.
Well, Gary, I have one last question for you to leave our listeners with some motivation for the week ahead. What's your favourite success quote, and how do you think people in real estate can relate to it?
Okay, well, the one I love is, and often quote, is the William H. Johnson quote, "If it's to be, it's up to me." And I like this one because it reminds me not to blame competitors, not to blame the market, you know, and similar excuses for not doing well. This one I think is about taking responsibility. And I tell you what, if we start blaming the market or blaming a competitor for discounting fees, we take the focus off the real cause of the problem, which is our lack of skill in being able to overcome those objections that our competitors have created for us. So if it's to be, it's up to me. But I also love, from a leadership perspective, a quote from Dave Anderson in his book, Up Your Business. He said, "People are not your greatest asset, the right people are." He says something along the lines of, "The wrong people are your greatest drain on resources." And what this taught me and reminds me as a business leader is that it's not just about having people in your company. It's about having the best people you can possibly get. Now, that doesn't mean that they start out that way, but by working with them and helping them, and provided they care enough, they'll learn enough to be competent at the work that they do. So it's not, people are not your greatest asset. You know, that's just nonsense. It's the right people are your greatest asset. You know, we say in sales, Josh, don't we, selling's a numbers game? Well, I believe that, but I don't believe leadership is a numbers game. You know, it's not about having a big team. It's about having a competent team. And I'd rather have a small team of competent crack troops than a big team of useless, unskilled people roaming all over the territory, annoying clients. So they're two of my favourites.
Well, listeners, you can find all of the resources that Gary has shared with us today, along with all of the show notes, by visiting our website at steps.com.au/GaryPittard. Well, Gary, on behalf of our listeners, I'd like to thank you for your time, knowledge and advice today. I know that people are going to resonate with the content you've shared. How can people get in touch with you or find out more about the Pittard Training Group?
Our website's pittard.com.au, Josh. And just Google Pittard, you'd find us.
Well, Gary, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Josh. And by the way, mate, I've really been enjoying the podcasts.
Oh, thank you, Gary. That's very kind of you to say. I've been looking forward to having you on the show for quite some time. It's been a real treat to have you join us today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, that's it for this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you do enjoy the Real Estate Pros podcast, we love reviews to help us get found. So please head over to iTunes and leave us a review. And whether you did or you didn't enjoy today's show, we'd love to hear from you about how we can improve. Because at the end of the day, the show has all started to help you, the real estate pro. Until next time, I'm Josh Cobb. I hope you have a great week ahead, and I look forward to having you join us again next week. Bye for now.